everyone. Welcome back to the Comedy Fix. It is me, Chris Alvarado. As always, I'm with Jamie Parkinen and my baby boy, Samuel Miller. You're more than a baby boy. You know, you're also my friend and you're an adult.
Right? Well, I take baby as a compliment. So thank
it you. Is a compliment. Good, yeah. Good. This is a cool episode because we had a listener write in about something that we haven't spoken about before, and it's worth talking about. So let me read you the listener's message so we're all on the same page. It says, "Hi, I was taking classes with this teacher in this place, by the way." I'm not going to include the names and the schools and the teachers. So let me try this again. "Hi, I was taking classes with this teacher at this one school for the last 9 months. She turned me on to your podcast, which I love. Thank you for that. I just moved to another place and took my first class here, and it was nightmarishly, cartoonishly terrible with a deeply fragile teacher. I'm also the only woman with 5 awkward men. And obviously, I got spoiled at the other theater, being an amazing community and having great teachers. After talking to other improvisers, I've decided I'm going to try to stick it out here because apparently there's learning to be had when you have a bad teacher and maybe a bad team. I'm not writing them off just yet. Anyway, it seems like this might be a common occurrence, and I thought it might be a cool episode topic: how to learn with a bad teacher, or what defines a bad teacher." Well, thank you for writing in. I told this person that we'd be using this message as a prompt for this episode, but I didn't say I'd be using their name.
Can you
hear me? Yes. Can you hear me, Sam?
Can you hear me? I can't hear you, Chris. I can't hear Sam either. What's going on?
Oh, I can hear everyone just fine.
Hello?
We can hear you.
You
can hear me. I can't hear you.
Okay. Let's see.
Oh, anything now I can hear you.
Okay.
Now I can hear you. Ooh, I don't know. Okay. Let's just pick up where you finished reading the message.
Okay. Okay. Because that's probably all fine, right?
That was all fine. I heard that. And then I started to want to say something and then...
Okay, so I'm going to pretend like I just kind of finished the message.
Yeah.
Thank you for writing in to us. We think this is a great topic. I spoke to this person. I let them know that we would be using this as a prompt for our episode, but I didn't say if I'd be using their name or not. So we'll leave all that out. But bad teachers, can we learn from them? Should we learn from them? This is tough.
I love that the listener clearly knows the show, because the question is, how do we define a bad teacher? And I know Jamie loves his definition, so maybe we can at least sort of start there. Like, what makes a teacher good or bad?
I have some thoughts on that. And this isn't all inclusive, but I will say that a bad teacher is one so married to the curriculum and so married to the exercises that they are not present in the room. And they're not flexible. If an exercise is not hitting and it's not working and the class energy is dying slowly in a corner, we can abandon that, or we can adjust it and make decisions in the moment that kind of help facilitate what that exercise, I guess, is after. So I think not being present in the room and like just married to whatever they think they're supposed to be doing in that, you know, 3 hours or 2.5 hours, or whatever it is, I think that the worst classes I've been, that's usually what's happening. That's number one. And then number two is kind of similar to that, but the notes and the feedback about like what you're supposed to get out of the exercise. Sam, you and I had this at the intensive. One of the teachers, we would do the exercise, and whatever the teacher expected us to have gotten out of it, we didn't actually get out of it. Like, the exercise went in a different direction, but this teacher would then go back and say what we should have got out of it and what should have normally have happened, and kind of creates these straw men of like how bad improv normally happens, and that usually this is a great exercise to help correct that. But no one did the bad improv. It was just good improv. But this person kind of gave us like this weird, but normally most improvisers don't do that. And that's why this exercise is good to help improvisers not do that. But none of you did it in the first place. So it's like, it's again, a lack of presence, I think, in the room to kind of help meet students where they're at and kind of, I don't know, that's presence, I guess, is my answer. Or the lack thereof creates a bad teacher.
I would generally agree that that presence is important, not in so many words, but it's still interesting you say like strictly adhering to the curriculum, because I'm sometimes wondering like if sometimes it's a bad curriculum, and then how a teacher might navigate that, and how do I know it's a bad teacher and not a bad syllabus? Or, you know, I feel like sometimes the teachers are a little bit too willing to throw out the curriculum. Like, okay, great. So like, what is this class? Like, they're not interested in what the class is about necessarily. So they're like, oh, I'm really going to teach you this other thing, which can sometimes be challenging when you're just trying to put it in context with the other classes at that theater. Well, Chris, are you a good or a bad teacher?
I'm the best teacher.
Okay.
I'm the best improv teacher in the world. So there's
have
that.
Have you ever had a bad teacher?
I was just thinking about that because this listener went on to list some specific examples of how this teacher is bad, which aren't necessarily relevant for the podcast. But like, what if you just have a dope of a teacher, meaning they don't know the subject well enough? Like, what if they're not good improvisers, or like, it seems like this, I don't know. Or also, it also seemed like in this case, she had studied for 9 months elsewhere and is now taking a 101. I believe this was happening here. So like, maybe he seems very basic or elementary compared to her experience. This is tough. Yeah, I guess I've had bad teachers though. My bad teachers, I always have like personal beefs with them. Yeah. That doesn't make them a bad teacher. It means that like I have my own shit about these people.
But that can make for a bad class experience, because I've certainly had it too, where you don't like click with the teacher, right? I think like just the way human personalities are, you're going to click with some more than others, and some that can really affect how I feel about a class. Is like, oh, I kind of don't want to see that person today, or you know what, like I'm really excited for them to tell me the next exercise, right?
There's also like good teachers in bad situations teaching old material because they have to, because certain, you know, established institutions are making them do that. I mean, last night, Jamie and I were in a clown class. I think this teacher is great. He was one of our guests, David Bridell. I think he's a great teacher. The class was sometimes hit or miss for me, which is kind of interesting, but I wouldn't mark him down as a teacher. Like, I wouldn't take that away from him being a good teacher. So maybe it's complex, but how about this? I guess we haven't fully defined, but we have a general idea maybe of what a bad teacher is. Is there still benefit? Can we still find, yeah, benefit in that, grains of information, useful stuff? I think that's her question here is, if we just say this person is a bad teacher, can you still learn? Maybe you learn what not to do type stuff. I don't know. This is kind of stumping us.
I mean, I have been in situations where I'll just try to give myself challenges beyond what the exercise is, right? So if I feel like I'm not vibing with whatever the approach is, or maybe it feels a little basic, like for me, I can just put one other thing on myself as an exercise and say, okay, the exercise they're having us do is on agreement. I am going to do agreement, and I'm also going to focus on my object work. Like, and that's going to be something that I can kind of measure for myself. And so I'm at least using the time to get on stage and perform.
Because that's you being a good student.
Is that being a good student though? Because like, that might not be what the teacher is looking for sometimes, right? It's just sort of me coping with, oh, I'm not super excited about this thing right now, or I'm not getting the feedback I want here, so I'm going to have to like try something else.
Well, I do think there's like a hydraulic system of like good teacher versus good student. When the teacher's really good, the students can kind of chill a little more because the teacher's able to like really help meet the students where they're at. When the teacher's bad, the students now have to do more of the work to get something out of the class. And so there is kind of like this back and forth you know, depending on the quality of teacher, that might affect the quality of student.
Yeah, I'll certainly ask more questions in a class with like a teacher that I'm struggling to connect with, because I'll want to say, like, understand their context, where they're coming from, how they see this fits into larger stuff. You know, if it's a better teacher, they might either provide that to me, or I kind of see how things connect a little bit better.
I also think maybe, and in Los Angeles in particular, there probably aren't that many bad teachers. It's probably more like teachers, fine teachers. Like bad feels a little strong to me. I mean, Jamie, you took a class last night, and also like last week. You're always taking classes. You spend more time with teachers than either of us on this. What pops out for you? What's even if you're not vibing, or you don't love the material, are you still finding some benefits, some ways to play, enjoy yourself, or are you just like, fuck?
It's really tough, because I am in a class currently. It's an improv class, and I won't give any specifics, but one of the teachers, because they rotate through different teachers, one of the teachers I think is terrible. I just don't think he knows how to teach. And he, like, kind of how the listener said, has like this fragile-ness to him. So he kind of like gives like these aggressive notes that like were unwarranted for what just happened. And it just like creates this weird uncomfortable. And then I don't feel comfortable in the class. I don't want to do scenes. Like, normally I love to like get up and do a scene, but like, I don't want to do scenes. I'll just sit and wait for class to be over. I do learn a thing or two when he's talking. Sometimes he frames things in a way that I think that's interesting. So hearing him just talk about improv in general, I can kind of get some interesting nuggets from him, but I don't want to do any work in class. I don't want to get up. I don't want to do a scene. And to me, that's a bad class, because I'm fucking here to do improv and to play and have fun. So that's what I was kind of talking about. It saps the energy out of the room, and nobody wanted to do scenes. It wasn't just me. It was like, you look around, it's like, there's a pretty strong consensus here.
That's,
and so
terrible.
It is terrible. And I pushed through, because I'm like, I paid for this. You know, I'm kind of like Sam, like there must be a nugget here. I will dig and scratch for the small one morsel that I can like write down in my notebook as something to take away.
I bet a bad teacher doesn't know that they're a bad teacher. I bet if you ask this dude that our listener's talking about, like after class, like, hey, do you think you're a good teacher? I bet he'd say, yeah, I'm a good teacher, which is weird. I mean, I guess, you know, at some of the training centers, they do like class evaluations at the end where the students get to write in some stuff. I loved that, because people were always very complimentary to me. But like, that's kind of a good time to be like, this person sucks.
Yeah, I think it's important that schools have that feedback system. It really does help the administration. I've seen a little bit that from the other side at this past year in Philly, but like, they really do care about the surveys and what people say and what is working. And, you know, people pay attention to that, because might be a new curriculum, might be their first time teaching the class, might be, I mean, again, like, I feel like I've had teachers teach something that they're not actually interested in. And that's a challenging position to be in as a teacher, right? Because the students might be interested in that thing, but if you as a teacher aren't, you know, I'm starting to think like good or bad teacher is very relative, right? Like, my bad might be someone else's great. It just might not be for me or that point in time. I mean, I'll ask you like this. Have you ever quit a class? There have been a couple that I stopped going to over the years, and it wasn't necessarily a bad teacher situation. It was like sometimes just like I wasn't there personally, or it wasn't a good time for me to take that class, if that makes sense.
I have. Both of them have been groundlings classes, I will say. I think part of that is a product of the hyper rigidity of like when you're in those classes, they just like pump you through the exercises. There are usually too many people in the class. It's 3.5 hours, you know, with a break in it, but it's very rigid, and there's zero fun, joy, or play in any of it. It just feels like boot camp, but not in an enjoyable way. Because I like intense you know, reps. Like that is fun for me, but this didn't feel like that. This felt like pump them through the exercises. And a lot of teachers even have like the sheet of what they're going to be, you know, the exercises they have to get through, and we'll consult it throughout the class. And then the notes are so minute and just like inconsequential because like you didn't follow the exercise exactly as they had instructed. So it's just, it's so rigid that, but it's one of those things. It's like, I had a teacher one time that used this metaphor. I'm like, it's like a stoplight in the middle of the desert where there's nobody at an intersection and you're just stopped at the stoplight and there's nobody around. It feels like rules for rules' sake rather than rules that actually have some point to them and have some, like, there's really something here. So a lot of it, again, I don't know. I'm very verbose about this, but they were both groundlings class and it was basically the same exact reason both times. Yeah, I don't know. And to me, my metric lately for whether a show is good is kind of the metric of whether a class is good is, do I feel like my time has been wasted? Did I get anything out of this? Does this feel like a productive use of my 2.5 hours? Like, it's a pretty low threshold, to be honest, because I'm pretty easily entertained, especially with improv. But I would say that, yeah, some of these classes, like, it feels like my time has been wasted. Like, I got nothing out of it. And it actually drained me. I lost enthusiasm for the work, for the, you know, for the improv and for the community, like, after this class. So I don't know. But I'll let you guys respond to that, but I have a side thought because I'm also a teacher and I also teach classes, and how the school is set up is, you know, you teach 4 classes on a day. It's like a gym. So I teach on Monday nights with four weeks a month. And then the students can re-sign up. There's not like there's levels. They can just re-sign up constantly for the Monday night class and be in your class month after month after month. And some teachers have essentially no attrition. The students are constantly in that class. They sign up over and over again. I have huge amounts of attrition. So I'm like, interesting. It makes me think, like, am I a bad teacher? Am I a very acquired taste? Do people not like my approach to improv or my approach to teaching? Or is it just a coincidence? I don't know. Because sometimes it depends on the students in the class too. You know, the class experience. If you've got a good group of students and everybody's bonded, that also is very special and nice. So I have lots of thoughts. Feel free to respond to any of that.
Well, not being someone's taste does not make that person a bad teacher, though, because I've experienced that, or any training center has different personalities teaching, and you have favorites over others, but the other ones aren't necessarily bad, you know? Geez, you said a lot, and I had some really juicy things. Sam, if you got something, you can jump in.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I'm thinking about a couple of things. I'm thinking about how for some students, you might need a coach who's not giving a lot of notes and just allows a lot of reps because they've already had notes and they're just trying to like put things that they've already learned into practice. And then other times you might need someone who they're like, no, what I need is like someone who's lecturing a lot and like only a few scenes that get a ton of notes afterwards. Notes has been difficult, I think, at a lot of places. Do you have enough time in a class, right? If it's like a 2-hour class and you have 12 people in it, it's hard to give a lot of personal feedback. Like you kind of have to, you know, take a very wide blast approach and just sort of say things that apply to like 4 or 5 people. And so they're very general things, they're very basic things. I think that can be kind of challenging.
But even in that scenario, Sam, because that's about what I do, mine's at 2.5-hour classes, 12 students. I give time to all of them the whole time. After every scene, it's what's your experience? What are you feeling? Let's talk about it. If that means, though, that there's less scenes for sure. That means they're getting 2 to 3 scenes per workshop, right? 3 scenes.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a bummer. But anyway.
Well, that is like a teaching style, right? Like I can think of 2 teachers, one who you would get 1 scene a class and a lot of sort of talk in between, and then others who, you know, it's just reps, 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 reps. Mm. Like you're just constantly getting up there. Good, 2 more, you know, that kind of approach. The thing as Jamie was talking though, is like, we've all taught, and I think it's very important when I'm in a class that I don't have my teacher brain on, because that can get me into trouble if I'm like judging the other people in the class or like judging like I have to like really remind myself that like, nope, I'm a student. Like I'm going to try it however they're doing it here. Which can be really hard. I don't know if you guys are able to turn off that teacher brain as much or if that's a challenge for you too.
Well, I mean, Chris was in his first clown class last night and we were even talking about that in the parking lot afterwards. Is teacher brain. Is there some teacher brain? Is there an adjustment that you're going through, Chris?
Yeah. The whole thing was an adjustment. It was funky and it was fun, enjoyable, but it was funky. Because part of me is thinking about the exercise I'm about to do. The other part of me is watching the other students do the exercise. But another part of me is listening to the way this teacher describes it or his takeaways and stuff. Cause I think at the end of this class, I might be taking away more of teaching lessons than student lessons, to be honest. One thing though about our listener who wrote in about their particular situation is it seems like there aren't other choices. We're like, you're in LA, Jamie, we're in LA. Like, if you don't want to do a groundlings class, you can go find a class somewhere else. Is it detrimental to stay in a class that you don't love? Question mark. But, or like, if you don't have a choices, that would be tough. That would be tough. She's the only female. There's five other dudes, which is, you know, whatever. But just like, it doesn't sound like the most ideal situation. So what do you do? Is this when you start teaching your own classes? It's just an extreme example, but I don't think I could do that today. If I had to move to some small town for some reason, I don't think I could be in like a one-on-one class with four people. Like, you know, just, I would just be like, well, then I guess I'm not doing this anymore.
I tend to agree.
Yeah. The limited options is a challenge. I think then you have to ask like, what do you want to get out of it? Like if I kind of remember where I was at the 9 month point, like I was still developing in a lot of ways. I just wanted to take more classes. You know, starting a practice group kind of a thing with people that you do like in the community is about the next best step you can do. But that just means finding someone else that you like as a coach and teacher. And if you're in like in a school, it might be better to go through the school and be part of that community. So like, yeah, do you just suck it up for this class and hope that the next class is a better teacher? I'd probably have like a two strikes you're out policy. If I had like two classes in a row and I didn't like either of those teachers, that would be hard pressed to like keep going. But if it's just my first bad teacher at a new theater, I'd probably have to like see how the next one is.
What about the idea? Cause we read some context she gave us, but what about the idea of mentioning or suggesting things to the teacher? Like, it seems like she had some pretty great training prior to this experience. So she might know a couple of things that are not being presented just yet. I have a couple of thoughts on this, the idea of a student suggesting ideas or exercises or something in class. That's a kind of a funky situation. But if you do know, like she does, should you not? I don't know. That's a weird one, right? I don't know if I'm making that clear, but basically she had suggested to the instructor, like, oh, maybe we could do this. And the instructor wrote her an email saying, like, don't do that. Don't. I give notes, which is true. That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, sorry. I know I'm talking, I'm kind of going everywhere, but I will say, no, today I would. Today in class, I'm open to suggestions. I listen to the students and we go, okay, let's see if we can find something. But for a very long time, I would say I was not open to student suggestions.
Yeah. I think there are a couple components to that. One, it's a slippery slope, and like then everyone thinks that they can do it. And so you just have to tamper it down a little bit, I think, sometimes. I like to hear what people say and then maybe redirect to like, that's a good point. Like what we're focusing on is this. So all I'm asking for people to focus on is like this other thing right now. And again, like maybe that's something you yourself can just throw up there, right? If you're seeing something missing in scenes, be like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do this one thing. And I'm going to make sure that I hit it.
You know what? I like that, Sam. I like that. That you don't, Yeah, maybe you don't suggest it, or but you just do it. I like that idea. I do like that idea.
What about how much does a teacher need to present to the student, like kind of a coherent, I don't know, philosophy or lesson plan, you know? So if you're doing warmups and nobody knows why they're doing them, and then that doesn't relate to anything that's done later in class, and then one exercise it seems completely unrelated to the next, and it's not clear what the connection is, what the through line is, or the theme of the class is. How much of teaching is allowing the students to kind of wrap their brains and connect the dots for them, rather than just, hey, we're filling 2.5 hours because you paid money and that's what I got to do?
Well, there's another level in there, which is I'm somewhere in the middle, because I have an idea of the things I want to do, but I often don't do them. Because what I've learned is every time I show up with, like, today's the day we're doing listening, or today's the day we're focusing on this, it backfires. It feels uninspired. The room doesn't want to do it for some reason or another. And then here I am forcing this lesson plan on them. So I really come in with not a lot of ideas, just some basic ideas. And then I will shift and bend as the class wants that. Do you know what I mean? Warmups, you know, I don't really even know. I don't know. I don't use warmups anymore. I don't use warmups as a way to prepare them for something that we're going to do in class. We just move. Yeah. I mean, I am kind of, Sam, in that, like, see how this was funky and we just made this up on the spot. You know, we got kind of weird. We will be doing this for the rest of the class. So I guess there is some connection, please.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's become a bit of like a pet peeve of mine. And also I don't realize for a long time, I didn't sort of connect that, like, oh, I could just do the exercise we did in my next scene. Right. Like I talk about spacewalk all the time. Like I've never seen someone just be like, you know what? I'm going to lead with my nose for this character and see where it goes. So I do have to always remind myself as a student, I can use the exercise in my next scene work. But I really don't like when you come in with an exercise, it does a specific skill set, and then, oh, someone said they wanted to work on this thing. So you're going to dump whatever that warm-up was related to and jump into this other thing that might be completely different and not have a connection. And like that, I had a little bit of a teaching background. I taught for a couple of years. A lesson plan for any kind of teacher should be well thought out. You should have some kind of beginning that introduces some ideas, gives people a little preview of what they're going to be doing. Then you spend a little bit of time in the middle, kind of dedicated focus and study. And then at the end, it's sort of the see if you can apply it, right? Which is like homework or scene work or whatever. And that's
I say maybe. I say maybe to that. I say maybe.
All right.
I mean, when you say it, it sounds very logical and makes a lot of sense for sure. But again, I think because I spent the majority of my teaching career teaching someone else's curriculum and felt the pain of like, well, this is my day. My evening has been planned out for me. And this exercise relates to this particular scene work thing. And this thing relates to this. And time after time after time, just feeling like nobody wants to do this. Nobody's inspired. No one's pumped. And it's like, well, this is how it's been written by people who supposedly know what they're doing. Like, and listen, maybe it also depends on level, Sam, like experience level. Because when I walk into my workshop this Thursday, no, we're just going to go. We're just going to go and it's going to work. Like, I don't know how to word that better. When I say it out loud, it sounds funky as hell. But I want to tap into people's inspiration, which you talk about a lot on this, but I want to tap into that. And I think part of my process lately has been kind of calming down the voices, calming down the things we think we need to do in order to feel the things that we actually want to do. So I don't have a curriculum for that or a syllabus for that. I don't know really what that looks like, except I say those words, we shake it out a little bit and fucking go. I don't know. So Jamie, you've been in the classes, or you teach your own classes. Because what Sam's saying sounds very logical, right? And
I think there's a middle ground. I think it would be nice if the exercises, and I think it's unsatisfying. I guess I should phrase it that way. It's unsatisfying if an exercise feels like it didn't have a point. Mm. There was no takeaway. There was no like, well, why did we do this? And if there's not like a satisfying answer or any answer to that, then it's like, then that's when I get frustrated as a student. So I don't know that I need like Sam's full arc. That works in like traditional academic settings. I don't know if it works or is as necessary in the performance arts workshops kind of thing. Maybe he would disagree. I'd be curious to hear his thoughts. But yeah, I think that there needs to be some kind of point. I need to be able to wrap my brain around why this is valuable to me. Otherwise, it just feels like we're just going through the motions. And maybe that's this listener who wrote in kind of sounds like maybe that's what's happening a little bit. It's like they're just kind of doing stuff to fill time rather than you're doing this because of X. And then you walk away with something and you have a little, you know, your time has not been wasted.
This is weird for me. Well, even though I don't really do a lot of warmups, and when I do them, we just kind of make them up on the spot. I will say that my medium there, Sam, the purpose that I am trying to present is that I'm getting us in a physical and mental space to be prepared for the work we're about to do. You know, but I don't say that necessarily. I'm playing this dark cello music, whatever. We're moving through the space to get us out of our typical improv brains, to see the typical improv scenes, to make the typical improv mistakes, and to be typically bored. When I kind of shift the idea and the tone of how the class even begins, I feel like that does filter through the rest of the class and the performances.
Yeah. And I also think that your class structure kind of fits what you're trying to do in your class, right? Which is, let's be real, let's be more organic, let's, forget about some of the rules and structures we've learned before, like let's, you know, really explore. And so I think that makes a lot of sense, right? Mm. And like you said, the warm-up does actually fit what the sort of advanced scene work is about. I can think back to like learning UCB Herald, and we hired a coach and asked her to teach us, and she was very methodical in how she's like, all right, tonight we're going to focus on this aspect. And of course, I think a good teacher, to Jamie's point earlier about presence, you have to read the room a little bit, right? Like you have to know, okay, they're not feeling it today for whatever reason. They're in like a really zany mood, or everyone's tired and this is all big physical stuff. Like you do have to correct a little bit for some of that stuff. But yeah, I guess we're all kind of in the middle here of like, at least have some theme or some idea or some main concept or main takeaway. And maybe that does have to change, but ideally the 2 hours kind of make sense together.
One of the words that people used to describe my teaching style, which is like true, but kind of embarrassing, but I've seen it in the end of class surveys. I've asked people to give me some testimonials for my website. Even people talking to other people, and I hear about it, they say that I'm passionate. I'm a passionate teacher, which like, I don't know how I feel about it. Like, I know what they're saying, and I guess it's true, but for some reason I associate that word with like almost a false, and I don't know, it'd be easy to be fake passion. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I have a little bit of a weird feeling with that. But I think, I know they're not wrong. Because when I'm in, I go off, maybe sometimes too far. But passion might be a quality of a good teacher, somebody that actually gives a fuck. Because I spent some time with some teachers at other training centers that were like, they were like upset to be there. They were short with their remarks. They were kind of shitty and judgy. And then like, and people still were like, whoa, thanks. And I was like, what the fuck are we doing here? And then some of the teachers that were passionate, that even if I didn't agree with everything constantly, like, oh, this person loves this, this is how they're feeling it, all right, let's go, this is a fucking vibe, let's go. So I think passion from a teacher is important.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think there's a fine balance between, you know, teaching for a paycheck, being burnt out on the art form or being burnt out on the style or whatever, and still doing it for whatever reason. I think you do have to care. I think you still have to be interested in that stuff. And I feel like you can kind of smell those people when they're in the classroom with you and you don't vibe with them. Jamie, have you had teachers who are just kind of over it? Are you able to kind of tell quickly that they're over it?
Yeah. I mean, teachers that are over it, performers that are over it, you know, and it takes a lot of, you know, I don't know, restraint, willpower, something to not become one of those. Like to me, like, it's easy to go through the motions, you know, like, oh, I'm assigned a teaching job, or, oh, I have a performance slot every other Monday night, to like not have that just become, oh, okay. Like to keep that fire going when you do have a routine, like that, I think is the challenge, to like keep the passion going while it is still every Monday night I'm doing this. And so, yeah, I've been doing some reassessing lately. Cause like, yeah, I'm like, well, what am I passionate about, and how can I maximize that while minimizing, you know, the work or the stuff that I don't care for.
Can we talk about your, I don't know how we're doing on this topic, by the way. It's funny, you know, there were topics back in the day where we were like, I feel this way, I felt that way, you're wrong, Sam's probably right, we're out. And this one kind of just, I wouldn't say meandering, but it's tough. I've been curious about an upcoming class you have, an upcoming series you have, Jamie, if you don't mind talking about that. The idea is cool. It's also funky. And like, and as I said today in my, well, I used your quote, whatever, your promotional information in my newsletter this morning, you promise no learn, all play. I fucking love that. Tell us about what's coming up for you.
Thanks. Yeah, I am really excited about this. It's, I've called it clown cardio. And I've kind of, like I was just saying, I've been reflecting, like, well, what's fun for me? It's like, oh, do I really have fun when I'm performing with this group? Do I really have fun doing X, Y, and Z? And I'm like, not really. Sometimes it feels like kind of a chore that you just do because you're on the hamster wheel of improv. And what you do is you do X, Y, and Z when you're an improviser. I'm like, well, fine. But now that I'm doing that, I'm like, well, how can I condense what I'm excited about and what's most fun for me? So this class is kind of born out of that, where I'm just taking the most fun parts of an improv class, of an improv, basically everything that I absolutely love about improv and none of the crap that I don't like. So this is basically just a 1 hour class where it's just all silly, heart pumping, physical theater games where, you know, we're just going to have fun for an hour. There's no lesson. There's no lecture. There's no takeaways for anything.
Hold on. Okay.
I'm getting revved up.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's the passion we're talking about. I mean, first of all, an hour seems like no time, but when you're adding an actual physicality to it, that's a decent amount of time there, right? Cause you're sweating and pumping and moving.
Think if you were doing, it's like Sam's, when it's Sam's thing, when it's all reps, you know, that feels like a lot of work in a 2 hour class. If you're just doing reps the whole time and there's no notes, this class has no notes. I'm telling you how to play the game and then we're playing it. And then when that one's done, then I'm giving you the instructions for the next one. And it's just, I'm going to try to have levels so that like everyone's not like dead by the end. So that it has like a nice flow to it. But like, I'm not saying, you know, and we're making eye contact while we're doing this because that connection is vulnerable and none of that. It's like,
why not?
Because I don't want a couple things. I don't want to tell people what they should be getting out of something. If they feel a certain way, then I think that's great. They can feel however they feel. But like, I don't want to like put intellectualism on goofball play and vulnerability. I feel like I don't want brain. I want body and like heart and excitement.
Well, I wish you all the best on that, because it feels like the reason why some of these schools are around is that we're using the intellectualism to get them to a place where they can be goofy, right? Because we're in our heads and stuff. Another thing is, because I want to keep talking about this, I took Jet's clown class, which was more of like a movement class. But one thing I loved was the first half was very fucking physical. I mean, like out of breath, sweating, panting. And then somehow physiologically, that kind of opened us up for the next kind of half of these other exercises. And you were in a different zone because you had moved and maybe shook some of the nerves out. Is that part of your idea as well? Is it cardio to serve something?
No, it's cardio to play. But you know, if you think about it that way, it's like I do that first part of Jet's class where you're moving physical and stuff, and then the second half is the rest of your day. So you're more open and aware and present as you just go to brunch afterwards or whatever it is.
So, Sam,
it's just in your real life.
What we're witnessing here, Sam, is people like you and me, Sam, we're doing the good work. Okay. Improv. We love long form improv. We love clown. We're doing this stuff. We're teaching. Meanwhile, Jimmy Parkinen just came up with the fucking Soul Cycle version of clown. And he's going to make $1 billion off of this. There's going to be clown cardio classes all over the country. You do this instead of your yoga or in addition to and your Soul Cycle or whatever, fill in the blank. They're very popular, especially here in Los Angeles, but of course I'm sure all over the country. So this guy is going to make all the money. And you and I are going to be in these dirty basement classes, just doing it for the love of it. Congratulations, Jamie.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
I feel like Jamie's first clown game is going to be, all right, everyone, let's play tag. And it's just going to be a bunch of adults that Jamie has brought together on a playground to play tag for like 10 minutes. And you're running around, you're building up a sweat. It's like, all right, great job, everyone. We played tag. Now let's do some wheelbarrow races.
But Sam,
who wouldn't want to do that, first of all?
Also, there are very expensive and exclusive adult camps that I've heard about recently because somebody I know taught at one. And it's like the hippest, cool tech people with a lot of money, and they're doing just that.
Yeah.
It's, I was thinking about this is kind of a secondary, because all I want the class to be is just fun and play. And if you get some exercise and have a good time, great. But I do think that, you know, we talk about clowning as, you know, what is clowning about? We were talking last night, like, oh, failure. Failure is a big tenet of clowning. You know, you find your clown through failure. You find your clown through vulnerability. You know, that's like, you know, David Bridell and Chad might talk about failure. Jet might talk about vulnerability. But I think there's also a huge segment of clowning that's just found just through play. So I think even if you're doing this and it's all games and there's no like quote unquote failure or quote unquote vulnerability, even though they're probably will be, because I'm sure people will fuck it up and feel embarrassed that they did. There's a lot of the most fun parts about clown to me are the play. And I think that's almost the hardest to access because people don't know how to play anymore. So I don't know. I think it might kind of round out maybe some of the clown curriculum for those people who are not there for the workout. They're there for the clown. I think there is something in that even for them, but that's kind of not why I'm doing it. I think that just might be a side benefit, but I'm excited about it. I think it'd be cool.
I'm excited about it too. I got to show up to one of those. Can you be bad at that? Can you be a bad teacher in that scenario? I mean, I'm sure you can, but like, what are you going to bring some of that, you know, Peloton energy, like everybody now let's go and left and right and left and right. And you know, are you going to have some of that to you, or I don't really see that in you.
I think it would only be bad if you didn't explain what they were doing, so people didn't understand how to play the game or play the thing, whatever it is. And B, if you allow people to be physically dangerous in some way. So my job is kind of like caretaker and like facilitator more than it is like cheerleader.
Sam, are you when you're in town next, are you gonna take a clown cardio class?
I would love to. I texted Jamie. I've done some solo clown workouts, and my girlfriend is horrified to hear that I practice like slapstick falls in a park, because I'm sure I look terrible. I'm not very good at the slapstick falls to begin with, but it is a workout to like launch yourself down on the ground, pick yourself up again. It's like a goofy burpee.
I mean, totally. I literally, before this podcast, I was working on some stuff that I want to do for the first workshop. And I was doing it for like 45 minutes. I was out of breath. I still smell like sweat. Like, it just, you can't help but like get your heart pumping, but it was all fun. Like, it was the fastest 45 minutes. So I don't know. I
can't believe the amount of dates you've locked in for this. I want to tell the people. So, you know, I mean, eventually these dates will expire, but So many dates. I don't think I've ever seen a workshop like a one-off workshop, so many of them. It's such a good idea. So let's see here. Well, you probably know, right? Right off. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You have 7 dates coming up. October 15th, October 22nd, October 29th, November 12th, November 23rd, November 26th, and December 10th, all 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. That is, you are going to find a very interesting and specific group of people who are showing up to this place for this thing at that time. Yeah. And are those all Sundays? Yeah, those are all Sundays.
Sundays, also ones on Thanksgiving, because I'm like, there's nothing to do on Thanksgiving morning. So
that is the craziest thing. That is, I would never do that in a million years, Jamie.
Nobody does. That's why it was super easy to get the date.
Thanksgiving Day parade. What are you talking about?
Nobody who's coming to the workshop is doing that. If anything, we'll play it on the background.
Oh, well, that sounds fun.
That does sound fun.
No, I like the Sunday 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. slot for most of these. I basically booked every Sunday I could for the rest of the year. Just because I want it to be a regular thing, because I know this is like something that might be weird. Maybe one person shows up to the first one. It's something that you have to build, and hopefully it will spread word of mouth. So I just want to kind of create some kind of consistency that people can count on. So I just booked every Sunday I could, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for the rest of the year. And we'll continue to do so. And if this fails after 6 months, then I gave it a shot. But like, for the next 6 months, come on down.
I think you're right. I think this is definitely going to take some building, but like knowing that is fine. And then this has huge potential to take off. I know a lot of dance classes around LA are similar to this. My wife and I went to one a couple months ago where it's just like hip, cool people. I mean, young and old on the east side, it's some really gorgeous space. And we just pay this person, you know, a decent amount of money to like teach us some choreography for 2 hours. And everyone's just expressing yourself and you're failing and you're falling and you're spinning. And it's like, fuck, that feels great.
Yeah. I think that's why clown is so popular right now, is there's such an appetite to like kind of be silly and let loose a little bit. I think we're all so like, I don't know, locked up, that I think there's just a real appetite for it. So it's just making it palatable to people who like don't want to do a solo performance and fail and be excoriated by some director person.
Yeah.
Like, they're not in it for that. They just want to have fun, which is kind of what I'm in it for. Like, I'm not here to like be famous or like make it. I'm just here to have fun and do art and enjoy. So, well, thank you for the 20-minute promotion. Like, I'm glad to actually, let's check in with this, because I'm so excited about this. And like, I really see a lot of fun and potential with it. So it's fun to kind of talk about it before it's actually launched. And then let's talk in 2 months and see how it's going.
I think it's cool. I think it's really cool. I'm really proud of you now that you need me to say that. I say that to you a lot. I say that to Sam a lot. I say that to Liam a lot. You're all adults. You're all adults living. But I do feel a bit of a, you know, I'm older than you and stuff, and I'm always rooting for you all. So I am proud of you. I never want that to be like in a demeaning sense. It's just like,
Chris, I'm proud of you.
Yeah, we're proud of you. Yeah, so that was the plug for the clown cardio, and they can find information at your Instagram, I would imagine.
My Instagram, yes. At Jamie Parkinen. I mean, let's do it.
So let's just, I don't know, somehow bring this back, kind of end, kind of find. I mean, there's got to be something. We're three bright people who love performance and improvisation, and the fact that we couldn't like lock in Sam on something in particular with this bad teacher thing, what does that say about it? That maybe it's just too relative, too subjective.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's I think there's so many ways that you can be a bad teacher, and there's so many different people that like one person just clicks the wrong way for, that it's hard for me to say like definitively, oh, this is what Del Close said about bad teachers. I don't think he wrote anything about that. But I do think that it's important to get context as a student, right? You know that there are better classes out there. Maybe there are better classes in your community. Maybe you just need to build something on your own. Like, you're not crazy if other people are feeling the same thing or sort of relate to it. I'd love this subreddit for improv, because a lot of common issues come up for people in like their first year of improv. And it's like, no, like, you're not alone. People have to deal with this kind of stuff. Do your best with it. If you need to leave the class, that's fine. If you can stick through it and see if they have better things, that's kind of the best you can do.
I like that. I like that. That's nice. And you know, we can all be better students too. I just did a workshop on this last week, Sam, and a water line broke. So there were no restrooms to be used on site. And then when the water was fixed, there was jackhammering. This was a 4-hour workshop I was teaching. For 4 hours, these students dealt with the, it was awful. And they were wonderful students. They were so gracious about the whole thing. It was really cool. But like, I could probably stand to be a better student, even in, I don't know, I think there's something about that. Gosh, I know we're going to wrap this up. I really want to talk about my experience in this clown class, but that's going to have to be a whole nother episode. Maybe.
No, just go for it. You got to get it while it's fresh, Chris.
All right. People are either super excited or they're turning this off right now, but it doesn't matter. Sam, here's my big takeaway. Here's what was kind of bummed me out a little bit is that David Bridell said something that I totally agree with, which is we grow when we're uncomfortable. It's not a lot of growth found when you're perfectly comfortable. Totally agree with that. But what happens when nothing in a class makes you uncomfortable? Are you then not growing? I was waiting for the moment, Sam. The clown, oh no, this is what they talk about. I'm being humiliated, or there's this vulnerability or something I have to tap into in front of all these strangers. There wasn't even a spark of that, Sam. After 27 years of performance, it's not hard for me to stand in front of a room of 25 people and meow like a cat or whatever. It's just not difficult. And because I wasn't feeling those sparks of, like, you know, some of the students talked about going through fear and joy all class, fear and joy, fear and joy. I was not feeling either of those. I was just in this middle place of like, oh, this is pretty cool. I didn't feel negatively about it, Sam, at all. Matter of fact, I liked the students, loved the space, loved the teacher. Mm-hmm. I just was like, I don't know how much I'm going to grow here, to be honest.
It's tough. I think it's expecting a lot from your first class.
That's right? True.
To give you the heights of what that art can promise.
Thank you.
But maybe you're a little uncomfortable in how not uncomfortable you felt. I'm hoping it's some baby steps. I will say, when I took thing with Bridell, one thing I was really impressed by him as a teacher was he like put his finger right on the pulse of the thing that I needed to work on, and like the thing that it took for me to become uncomfortable. So I'm excited for you. I'm excited for you taking your first class. I hope you stick with it and get to that point with Bridell, because maybe that's class two, you know.
It's really fun. And yeah. Jamie's in it, and Liam's in it, and our friend Amanda Blake Davis is in it.
I love that.
And I think it's, and also, you know, there's a film crew where they're making a document. Why can't I say the word? Say it for me.
You said it.
Documentary.
Documentary.
I keep wanting to say documentarian about it.
They're
making a documentary about it, which I haven't told you, Jamie. Makes me love the class a little bit more. Except for the fact that I don't want to manufacture any moments for the sake of camera. And I have not, but there is this little like thing in the back of your head, like, well, if I was the bad boy of the group, or you know what I mean? I get some real camera time here.
Don't go the hills on the clown school.
I think it's really cool to have a freaking camera crew. It adds this other element, and I love that part. I love that part of it.
Yeah, they're doing a pretty good job of staying invisible. Like, they're obviously there, but like, they're not really a distraction, which is, I think, very cool. So you can really still have the experience. You know, I was saying this to Chris last night. You know, the clown curriculum, the clown learning, the clown is
pedagogy. Call it the clown pedagogy. It's my favorite thing.
All right. The clown pedagogy, the clown, you know, the process of learning clown is very much an individual experience, which is why you can have such diverse students and still make it work, because the lessons are generally applicable. But if you're not feeling, you know, challenged or uncomfortable, it's a little bit, you know, if you do some one-on-one stuff, like when we do the solo exercises, maybe David can help push you in a direction that can challenge you. But also it's, you know, it's on you as well to like figure out, how can I challenge myself? Because you were very good at all the exercises, which makes me think that, like, you know, you're so good. You need to push yourself further. You need to ask yourself for more. If you can comfortably, you know, do this exercise and stay on top of it and control it, then you haven't given the exercise enough. You have to go even farther with the exercise, and you need to be jumping up and down and screaming in French. And, you know, like, you need to push yourself into things that you can't control anymore. That's kind of where the individual journey comes in, because David can't tell you what will and won't make you uncomfortable. You know, you have to identify that, which is part of the process, is like, what can I do in this exercise where my chances of failure are very high? And that's hard to do because normally our brain would not even consider those things. And so it's kind of just rewiring and inviting yourself to fuck up more and publicly that I think is the challenge.
I really like that.
Yeah.
Sam, and I didn't tell you this, Jamie. I think one of the most impactful moments of this 3.5 hour class happened towards the beginning. We were wrapping up some warm-ups, that we were on the floor, we were moving and doing the stuff. And I'll never forget this for the rest of my life. As we were standing up, getting up off the floor after rolling around and stuff, I'm just about to go fix my pants. And David goes, oh, and he doesn't see me, so it's not directed. He just goes, oh, another thing is, on your way up, don't fix anything. Don't fix your shirt. Don't fix your hair, which are the two things I desperately wanted to do, Sam. I desperately wanted to, because the viewers can't see, but, you know, I'm standing up like this. You know, you're all sweaty and your shirt's all messed up and my hair is off to the side. I remember standing in that going, this is uncomfortable. Oh, well, there you go. Like, I loved that moment. I told Jessica that and her eyes got really big. Like, for you specifically, somebody who can't walk the dog without dressing up a certain way, that was a really cool moment for me. Like, oh shit, not touching my hair or fixing my shirt right now. I love that. And so smart for him to recognize that is a thing. I've never heard that in all in everything. So, hey, look at me. Look at me. I am enjoying. I am growing. I'm growing.
Look at you. Just let it wash over you, Chris. Yeah, I think Sam's right. Don't expect too much. But whatever happens, happens.
It's also enjoyable. It's a fun. Totally. None of it feels like eye rolling or like what's going on here. It's totally fun. It's a good time. Yeah. Probably not as fun as clown cardio would be, but you know, that hasn't started yet.
I'm sorry. I'm working as hard as I can. Yeah, you know, there's only one Sunday a week. What am I supposed to do?
You proud of me, Sam?
I'm very proud of you. I think I'm excited to hear more about your journey and see how the rest of the classes go. So I'll be excited to check in on that.
Well, thank you to our listener who wrote in. I had a great time discussing that. I don't know if we landed on anything, although you kind of wrapped that up nicely a moment ago, Sam. And thank you to everybody for listening to us plug Jamie's show, how I'm feeling about clown class. I mean, what is this really? I mean, what, we could just talk about anything anyway. Speaking of plugging, hey, I do workshops all the time. I have a weekly newsletter where I send out, you know, shows I'm doing, some thoughts. I even post recorded shows. I promote Jamie's stuff and Liam's stuff. Go to my website, chris-alvarado.com. At the bottom of every page, you can sign up for my newsletter and, you know, take a class or just see what's up. I never do that. I never promote stuff like that. And I feel embarrassed.
That's good. See, this is that clown moment. You feel a little uncomfortable. Promote
Make
it
eye
harder.
Contact. Make eye contact with you all.
Promote it harder. Harder. Yeah,
It would actually mean a lot to me to know that people
harder.
Are listening and would take the time to type in their email. It makes me feel overwhelmed. Actually, I'm sweating right now thinking about the idea that I'm asking you for a favor. But I would like that, and maybe you would like that, and maybe everything, this is it. I'm failing everybody. And now I'm going to make eye contact with you as I fail on the way down. Goodbye.